Today on Bingers Assemble, we're starting our watch of Mission Impossible with Mission Impossible. 1996, baby. All the way back to little baby-faced Tom Cruise. All that right after this.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Bingers Assemble, the podcast where we rewatch movies so you don't have to. You don't have to. My name is Matthew Carroll, and we got two of our favorites here with us today. Haley Hobbs from Source Pages and Multiverse News, and J. Scotty St. Clair from Animation Deliberation and Multiverse News. What's going on, guys?
Not a whole lot, just lots of podcasting this week, and super excited for Mission Impossible.
Yeah, man, me too.
Yeah, likewise, super excited to be covering this franchise, and grateful to be in such esteemed company. This is a great crew. I loved it when we covered Bond together, and now being able to cover another spy thriller action series is a lot of fun.
There's obviously a lot of discussion of how those two series relate. This very much feels like Tom Cruise's attempt to create an American Bond. You know what I mean? Like, we've gotten how many movies will it be after Dead Reckoning 1 and 2?
Eight altogether.
Yeah. Ooh, that's more than any Bond ever made it. You know, like that's a lot of movies to be Ethan Hunt. And like, it's such a series now. But let's get started talking about the very first one with what we do here, which is called The Shot. Haley Hobbs has elected to take the shot. And that is where she has 1 minute on the clock to do as much of the plot as she can. Are you ready, Haley?
I'm ready. I've got my timer going.
All right. And go.
All right, so in Mission Impossible, Mission Force agent Ethan Hunt and his team are trying to get a non-official cover list of agents from a rogue somebody, but his team gets completely taken out. Their cover's been blown, and Ethan is targeted as the disavowed agent. He's the double agent, is what IMF thinks, but Ethan knows this is not true and that somebody else is at play. One of his team does show up as alive, and he recruits her and two other disavowed agents to steal the actual knock list from the CIA in Langley. Awesome scenes. And then they go back to Prague where everything was taking place. He's working with an arms dealer. He gives her the live list. She gives him money. And we find out that, boom, his former team leader, mentor, was the baddie with his wife, Claire, who was the other person that was alive. And they get the money, they think, but then Claire dies and he dies and there's a helicopter in a tunnel and it's pretty cool. That's a minute.
I like it. All right.
I got the highlights, I think.
Yeah, you totally got the highlights. Well, the next thing is The Chaser, where Jay Scotty's going to join in and give us the things that Haley may have missed. Give us a little color to this bare bones plot. Jay Scotty, are you ready?
I'm ready.
30 seconds on the clock and go.
Yeah, as far as the major beats, it's all covered, so I'm just going to try and pepper in some details there. in terms of Ethan being on the lam and trying to deduce the identity of this mole, there's this nice little sequence where he only knows the mole as Job, so he's like looking at, you know, Bible passages and using the internet and kind of having this relationship with Max, all trying to figure out who Job is, and then you get the ultimate revelation that it was Jim Phelps that was Job. Other than that,
that's
Kitteridge.
That's your time.
Spent it all on Job.
Yeah. You spent the first 10 seconds telling us what you were going to do. So you're like, I'm just going to pepper in some stuff. And I was like, oh, you're not much time to pepper, buddy. okay. So that Job thing was really interesting. I guess let's move to open bar. I love a good mystery that you can solve on screen. And the Job thing was one of those. And I solved it almost immediately. I see they were like Job 3:14. And as a Bible Belt boy, I was like, Job 3:14. That's what that says. but I was like, I couldn't decide if I figured that out or I just remembered it from when I was 13 and watched this movie.
But you were right.
I was right, but I was like, did I figure that out? Did my mind do that? Or is it just like knowledge that I vaguely remembered? Oh man, it's funny.
There's so many really big names in this movie, mm-hmm. which is kind of interesting. It wasn't supposed to be that way initially. They were supposed to bring in a lot of the former actors from the Mission Impossible TV show that was in the 60s, which is what this is based on. And none of them wanted to do it because they found out they were all going to get killed in the beginning.
Oh, they were supposed to be his team?
Mm-hmm, they were supposed to be the team. And so then you get Emilio Estevez and John Voight and Kristen Scott Thomas and all these other really cool actors in, which I think in the long run probably gave it a lot of credibility. I don't know that those older actors also like didn't like this film. They didn't like the direction it went at all. They thought it was not conducive to how the former show was. And so I think all around it was a better thing to have those big names to draw people in. And then, of course, Tom Cruise to star.
Yeah. And Tom Cruise, like before this point, he was not known as the action star that he's known as today. Like he had appeared in comedies and dramas, but he really sowed his oats here as like a viable action star. So I did appreciate like upon a rewatch how it really stood out to me that in the opening sequence, like Ethan Hunt is not established as the main character at all. Like he is kind of introduced as a side character. He's just this point man. And of course, at the time of this movie coming out, like Emilio Estevez was kind of at the height of his powers, and the fact that he appeared uncredited in this film, I think says a lot in the way, they killed him off and the whole team just really adds that shock factor. And, Emilio Estevez's character, Jack Harmon, I think he had one of the worst deaths of like this entire franchise. It was pretty bad.
I remembered that death. Like, I remember watching it when I was a kid and being terrified by it, and I didn't remember what movie it was from. Like, I thought it was from a horror movie. It's so bad. His face getting, like, crushed by that spike. I was like, what horror movie was that? Then I was watching this today, and I was like, I'm having a core memory. Oh, my God. This is it. This is the scene.
Emilio Estevez getting squished.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty gnarly death for the Mission Impossible franchise. They don't do that very often. Mm. I think that it was done on purpose. I think it was supposed to be a shocking thing.
Yeah. Well, it's also only like one frame where you actually see the squish. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like they linger on it, but it's so fast and so like, oh my, did that just happen? Did I see what I saw? It's wild. That's crazy. And you mentioned Scotty, how he doesn't seem like the main character. The thing that I loved going back, I've seen the other Mission Impossibles more recently, obviously, so I haven't seen this one. I didn't like this movie as a kid. I loved the scene at Langley. That scene's epic and fun and so tense. And I remember loving it. And then I thought everything after that was like a denouement. Like it all felt like downhill from there. And I think that I felt that a little bit this time, but I think mainly because it's like Tom Cruise versus John Voight in a physical confrontation seems weird. Like it's just the whole, like normally when you get the old like expert guy versus the young upstart strong still in his prime guy, you give the old guy like lots of power, but they're just both like agents on the run, and it just felt completely like this is a foregone conclusion. Tom Cruise has this, you know. But that's neither here nor there. When I watched it this time, I realized like he really does change, and if nothing else, I don't know how much. I've been thinking about the Mission Impossible series, getting ready to cover it, and I don't know how much character development over movies that there is, but in this movie, he starts the movie as a kind of a wisecracking point man who is like just following orders. He trusts Phelps, and in all of the rest of the movies, he is a lot more established as like the rogue agent who does what has to be done. But I didn't realize that in this first one, that's not who he is. And he learns to be that way. And that scene when Phelps' wife comes in and he aims the gun at her and he's freaking out because she's like, he's like, you're dead. You're dead. No, you're dead. That is a man who is not used to being so untrusting. Like he doesn't know how to process the information. He doesn't know. And this whole movie is him becoming the guy who trusts no one. And I think that's kind of awesome that this movie, like, I didn't think it was going to have that much depth character-wise, but it really does for his character, puts it in the place where he is for the rest of the series, not to spoil, but for the rest of the series, he's a lot more of that character that he becomes in this one.
Yeah, he does have that James Bond, like, the femme fatale thing is always the one thing that kind of gets him down, but he still always gets the upper hand on them. He always knows, at the end of the day, if they are double-crossing him or not. And I do love unhinged Tom Cruise, though. He does unhinged better than a lot of people do.
Oh, yeah.
In a way that's very believable. Because in that scene that you're talking about, Matt, he is totally freaked out. And then when he's with Kittredge in the fish tank restaurant, which is an awesome scene, by the way. They did that practically, which is super cool. It's the beginning of him unraveling where he's just like, my team is dead, my team is dead, my team is dead. And he's kind of like Francis, you know, the people, the people, the people. And it's like, nobody quite has that. The way that Tom Cruise does it, in my opinion, is just kind of special and unique to him.
The other scene that really stands out with that is, and it's character growth. And I love it. The first scene with that is the phone booth. When he picks up, he's like, my team is dead. My team is dead.
Yeah.
The list is out in the open. Did you hear me? The list is out in the open. He's freaking out. Yeah. And Kittredge is calm because Kittredge knows this was just a mole hunt. And he thinks he's got him. It's a great scene. And the Dutch angles in this movie.
I wrote that down.
Yeah.
I was like, Brian De Palma loved him some Dutch angles.
He does. Yeah. And it happens in those scenes specifically. What I love is later in the movie, when he realizes Phelps is the baddie, the guy he's been trusting his whole, who like trained him. There's some great scenes between them where they talk about the training. That scene tastes totally steady, and that's him learning to be mistrustful of someone, but have a strong face on and like keep it cold, keep it under wraps. And he could not do that at the beginning of this movie. And I love that this movie, he like learns that lesson, and it's really cool.
That's so cool. Yeah, I didn't like think of it that way, but that's absolutely accurate.
Yeah. I love that we all notice the Dutch angles so strongly because when Haley, you mentioned like the practical effects I was going to bring up, like I agree with everything that's been said in terms of like character development. I do think this film as a whole, like thinking about the franchise, and I'm trying to avoid that as we're kind of like going by film, but I just can't really avoid it. I do think this first film in like the collective appreciation sometimes gets lost in the shuffle, but it really is like far and away like the most character development we get for Ethan Hunt and really establishes him as this super likable and super capable character. But one thing I picked up on is like this film like simultaneously feels like it's aged really well in some parts, but then in other parts not so much. And I do think the parts where it feels like it's aged really well is like the classic like filming techniques, like the use of the Dutch angles to like sell like disorientation and how unsettled someone is. And then of course, like the practical effects that you brought up there, Haley. So.
And I think this movie is where Tom Cruise, like you said, I didn't really realize that, but I'm looking at his IMDb and you're right. This is really his first big action thing. That's awesome. Because like,
because Top Gun was 10 years before this, right?
Right. Which is action, but it's not a fighter, you know, he's like in a plane, like it's a little different. But him transitioning into this like brawler of a spy character that he's been in a lot of other things like Jack Reacher now and stuff like that.
Sure.
It's just an interesting turn, and I think he learned the lesson in this to use practical effects, because there are two big action sequences in this movie. It's the Langley scene, which is, I mean, that scene made this movie. It's everyone was talking about. That him catching that bead of sweat is like the all you need. Like it's the like relief of your chest is tight, you're just so tense, and then that just release when that just catches and you just see it all land in his hand. You're like, oh, he got it. It's so good. But then the train scene is probably cost a lot more money. It's real big, but that scene feels terrible because it's so CGI to me.
Yeah.
And I think he probably, like, after that, after this movie, I think all of the Mission Impossibles after this, I think it's two that starts with him on the cliff face, right?
Correct.
Yes. I have so much to say about that movie.
Yeah. I'm excited about that one. But like, everything after this, he starts doing these crazy practical things. And I think the first one, he did the crazy practical thing with the dangling on the wire, and that worked so well. And he goes on to like do that more and more. And I think it's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He did almost all of his own stunts in this movie. And I think this is, like we've been saying, what solidified him as the action star that he is. It's also the first movie he was a producer on. And he produces his movies because he likes to have that creative control so that he can do things like this. But I always say that if I was in a moving vehicle that was something scary, like a plane or something, I would totally want Tom Cruise to be driving it because I would trust him implicitly because he's really good at doing that stuff. But yeah, the end thing is... Ugh.
Yeah, it's pretty
rough.
It feels like a 1996 action sequence. You know, it just feels like sort of bad green screen, bad CGI. I mean, it's not bad for the time, but like it's just really clearly green screen. It doesn't feel as visceral. And then John Voight and him racing up a helicopter. I'm like, no, come on. I just don't buy it at all. I just don't buy this. Like, this is a struggle.
Yeah, him getting blasted forward by the explosion back onto the train, that's just, like, really terrible.
It's kind of Looney Tunes.
Yeah, it is.
He doesn't even have a vibranium shield. I mean, come on.
Loser.
One thing I did want to bring up, though, while we're giving Tom Cruise all this love, and one thing that really, like, struck me about, like, Ethan Hunt as a protagonist is he doesn't fire a gun the entire runtime. And I think that's like really, that's really something. Like, I don't want to get into like politics or anything like that, but to have a protagonist that uses his brains and his wit and his ability to get out of situations without ever having to fire a bullet, like that's awesome. I want to see more of that.
Something I hadn't noticed, but there's a scene toward the beginning when Phelps's wife is talking to him in the apartment. She's just come in and she's doing a, inventory of the items. And there was this look on his face when she says, we have 40 rounds for this weapon, but we only have 12 for this weapon. There was this look on Ethan's face, like, I don't really care. Like, I don't need that. That's not what I did. But then she mentions the camera, the glasses, and the wristwatch, and that's how he wins in the end.
Yeah,
and like, it's really neat. It's really neat that's like, yeah, it's totally, it's almost like they're telegraphing that point that you just made at the very beginning of the movie. Like, this is what actually is important to him, and this is what's actually going to win the day.
Yeah, just because he's young and inexperienced doesn't mean he's not super smart, and that's cool. Yeah, I love that.
I love Luther in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Ving Rhames as Luther is great.
The best.
I know he's in some of the future installments, but I always want him to be in them more. Like, I always, like, he shows up in a few scenes in some of them. Again, not to spoil too much, but, like, I know he's, I can't remember if he's in, which ones he's in a lot or
he's in two a lot, and three is the one I think I've seen the least. I think he's in three a lot, and then that's when he kind of drops off and got replaced by Simon Pegg.
I think he shows up at least in one scene in every single one of them.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Does he in every one? Yeah. I remember seeing him in a few scenes and some of that's so cool. I love Luther. I love the ending where he's like, how do you like feeling, how do you like being not disavowed? He's like, man, I'm really going to miss being disreputable.
Well, if it's any consolation, I will always think of you that way.
It's great lines.
Silly
great
little lines. Dialogue. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just like, casting against type, like when you think about that archetype, like the tech specialist, like you usually think of like a thin, kind of like bespectacled, nerdy guy. And the fact that they cast Ving Rhames and it works so well, like, gotta love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've been like avoiding the vault scene. And I don't know why. First of all, that poor guy had the worst day of his life. And now he's in Alaska manning a radar tower.
Right? Poor guy.
Send him his clothes and a suitcase. Kittredge. I love that, though.
Yeah.
That seems amazing. I don't think there's much to say about it, except it's just flippin' iconic as hell.
Yeah, it's iconic. It's, yeah. I mean, everywhere that was being parodied everywhere, mm-hmm. and everything that year. I remember, like, I don't know, the MTV Movie Awards or whatever. Somebody like came down to the podium in a little harness or whatever. It's iconic. It's like that year of movie making was like that scene. Like that's mm-hmm. the scene we all think of from that year. It's really, really great.
For sure.
Even if you've seen it a lot, though, like you were saying, Matt, it builds the tension because of the quiet. It builds that tension. And I was sitting mm-hmm. in my, I was like kind of working on my laptop and watching, and I was still kind of like, oh my God, oh my God, the rat's coming. Oh my God. You know, it was like, I've seen it a lot, but it still gives you that, which that's such a hallmark of good movie making.
Yeah. Mm,
definitely.
I have one problem with it, though.
Oh.
On rewatch, I got really annoyed at one thing. It happens twice. Krieger is holding on to the pulley, and it is made very clear that he is doing it with his muscles. He is getting sweaty. He is getting like, it's impossible to hold, but then when they need it to go up fast, it just goes up fast with no explanation. They never showed there's some sort of like a button. Like it would make sense if they were like, we need you to use, cause if there's sustained noise for too long, we can't, you know, this thing's too noisy. We can only use it in extreme circumstances or something. They could have shown some line, but like, there's just like, there's no explanation. He's holding the pulley and then like, I can barely hold him still, much less I need to just zoom up like into the ceiling. He does it twice, just zoom from this floor to the ceiling. It's like, dude, that wasn't Krieger. Krieger couldn't have done that.
Yeah, maybe it was the rat.
The rat did it, yep. Rats of unusual strength.
He's fallen off the pulley, so then it's just pulling against the metal of the ceiling tile, and I'm like, wait, isn't that triggering the noise? But you know what? These are nitpicky things.
Yeah. I think that one happens right as the guy's opening the door.
Yeah.
So that one, at least, like, the measures are turned off.
Right.
But, like... Yeah, before that, it does it once. When the pulley's still working, it does it. And it's just like, how does he do it? I just don't get it.
Up is easier than down, I guess.
That's what they didn't explain about this scene. Gravity works backwards.
Yeah. In Langley, it does.
Really intense CIA vault where gravity works backwards.
I do love the knife dropping from the ceiling.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, your fate is sealed, bro.
The fact that he has the audacity to say, like, what does he say, sloppy or messy? And then he's the one that was, like, messing up the entire time with the sneeze, with the rat kerfuffle, and then finally dropping the knife. Like, in retrospect, you've got to kind of wonder, was he doing some of these things on purpose to try and potentially get Ethan? Well, I guess that wouldn't have served him because he wouldn't have had the knock list.
Yeah, he needed the knock list. The thing about that's something that bothered me in this movie, too. Just some little holes, like the pulley thing, but also when he sits across, he finds that the Bible, and that explains to him why Phelps was the baddie. Maybe is it his wife or Phelps was probably the baddie. But then it doesn't explain why he understands Krieger was there at all. Krieger like has that scene. Did I miss something?
Well, are you saying why Krieger was there or why? He deduced that Krieger was one of the inside
people. Yeah, exactly.
They do a flashback where when Krieger went to knife the CIA agent that was checking in on the firefighters, he saw the knife at that point in time, and he recognized the knife as the same knife that was used to kill his team member in Prague when he went up to her at the fence line.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so and Claire also says... Krieger was my call. Sorry. Like, she, mm-hmm. when he's been kind of shitty about the knock list.
Right. Well, that was just because he was being shitty about the knock list. And that's just him as a mercenary, I thought. Like, he's just being a mercenary.
Well, but he suspects Claire, too. Right. So it's like this triumvirate nastiness.
So if she's bad. And I get, mm-hmm. but yeah, there's just a moment where he, like, has this flash of realization and sees him stabbing. I guess that's the knife thing I missed. Okay, mm-hmm. that may be all it is that I missed that. But I guess it seemed more tenuous than the other stuff where he like figured stuff out. It had to have been someone on the mm-hmm. team. I felt like from the very beginning. And I remembered who the villain was because as a kid I was like, I think I had the same reaction like because I didn't know who John Voight was as a 13-year-old and I was just like, it's some old dude. He's got a fight on a train. What is happening? This feels really weird. some old guy. He's fighting on a train. I don't even remember that guy from the beginning of the movie. He was some old guy. I didn't even pay attention to him. And now I'm like dangerously close to John Voight's age or something.
He probably wasn't that old in the movie like we think he is.
Yeah, exactly.
But he looks pretty old.
Dude, have
he's been old for a long time.
Yeah,
he's
been old forever.
Have you guys seen when people do the... People talk about how, like, the gold, they talk about the Sex and the City ladies are the same age as the Golden Girls.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
Like when they were making that show, they were about the same age as the Golden Girls. And then, there's like some TikTokers who were talking about that and they were like, why did they look so much older in the 80s or whatever? Was it just like the style or the makeup? And then a lady like puts on the makeup from that era, like the way they did it. And then like, she's that age and she looks to the camera and she looks just like a Golden Girl. Like it looks exactly that same way. And she's like, yep, it was just, they did the makeup was not doing them favors back then.
Yeah. Also, money can buy you a lot more pretty these days than back then.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking up John Voight's age, sorry, to see how old he was. He was like 60. I still got a few years.
Okay,
you know? I still got a few years.
He's like, he looks about 60. I was going to say he's...
Yeah. I thought so too. And I mean, yeah, I don't know how old... I'm guessing Tom Cruise is probably in his... See, I don't want to look
I think Tom Cruise is 60.
He's 60 or, now.
Yeah. Does that sound wrong?
I have no idea.
He's definitely...
Oh, okay.
He's 60 or 60 plus, like maybe early 60s, 61, 62, something like that. So if this was...
Yeah, he was 34 almost, at this point.
Okay. I was going to guess somewhere early 30s.
Yeah. So... Okay.
And I will not look like Tom Cruise when I'm 60.
Oh, man. So I just think this is a great outing in this. I didn't like it when I was a kid. I thought it felt boring except for that one scene. But as an adult, just a lot of the stuff they do is a lot really intriguing if you're paying attention. And if you're, I wasn't on this level when I was a kid, when I was 13. I was like, this feels boring. And I don't like the old guy. And I don't like the old guy twist. And
yeah, I concur. I think I had similar feelings about it, but I love spy versus spy. And so that's basically mm-hmm. what this movie is. And now as a grown up, I'm like, oh yeah, this is great. This is intrigue and intellect and, you know, backstabbing and double agents and all the fun stuff about spy movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and going off of that, I think that is one of the strengths of the movie for me as well, is the fact that it requires you to pay attention. Mm-hmm. And it clocks in at under 2 hours. And like, I don't know, like movies that come out now, like sometimes I'm just like, why do they feel so beholden to like come in at 2 hours? Like, I could have used like another 15 minutes to tell this story, but it is it's a simple story, but with its, you know, folds, but they tell it so effectively, and I feel like the pacing is incredible. Like I never lose interest at all, even though I've seen this movie a few times. So like doing this rewatch, I was just engaged and enraptured all over again. So kudos to Brian De Palma and everybody that made this thing happen. I think I did read that they entered pre-production without a shooting script, so mm-hmm. you know, sometimes that works.
Wow. I think it's a great outing in the franchise. I'm really excited to see where it goes and like really get to track these things. We always talk about it, but like Binge's Assemble format is so much fun to like be able to track the small changes that make a big difference and what makes a movie great and what makes a movie bad and what's better to compare but sequels. And it's so much fun. I really agree with you, Jay Scotty, about the timing of this. I think keeping this under 2 hours is so important. And I miss this. Like this used to just be the norm. Movies were always under mm-hmm. 2 hours. 2 hours was a long movie back then. Hour and a half was more normal. Action movies particularly were short because they're expensive per minute mm-hmm. to make. So people like to keep them short. And I miss the days of the 2 hour action movie that just like gets in, gets out.
Down and dirty.
Yeah, that's right. We just did the John Wick movies and it's like those start with the 2 hour format and they slowly drift, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get to bottom shelf, which is our part we'd say our least favorite thing about the movie. It can be a character, it can be a moment, it can be a location. That would be weird.
I'm gonna say bottom shelf is going to be the character of Claire in general. I don't like how young she is compared to John Voight. I think they scrapped like a romance plot with her and Ethan, and that's probably why they cast her so young. But it gives me the icks. And then I didn't find her just to be very compelling in general on screen. Knowing that she's playing the double agent storyline, she could have brought a little more life to it. Instead, she's a little too damsel in distress for somebody who's supposed to be like a secret agent.
Yes, I see that.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and do my bottom shelf because it coincides with yours, Haley, like perfectly. You know, I was thinking it'd be easy to pick on the way the internet's depicted, like especially this far removed. That's one of the things that ages the movies. I even contemplated, like, I talked about how, you know, one of the nice things about this movie is that it requires you to pay attention, but there are a couple of sequences where, like, they narrate things from the past, and, like, on rewatch, I was like, oh, this feels kind of hand-holdy when it was doing such a good job of just, like, no, you need to pay attention to what's happening. But ultimately, upon this rewatch, this thing that really didn't land for me was the character of Claire and her death. Like, I get that it was trying to sell Jim Phelps as even more of, like, a villain, and it felt like it was also, in some ways, trying to redeem her right there at the end, but it all just kind of, like, rang false for me in the end. It wasn't super compelling or effective, ultimately.
My bottom shelf, I mean, yeah, the two things I had, like, written down as possible were just, like, really, really, really nitpicky, but they bothered me a lot, and that is the pulley. Mm. The, like, magic pulley.
Yeah.
It annoyed me because it's such a scene of, like, logistics, and, like, you have to worry about a 0.1 degree in the raise of temperature, but you're not supposed to make me think about it when he just, like, zooms up when that's a big part of the tension. Like, what the hell? It bothered me. So then there's that. And the train is just, like, the on top of the train stuff. It works fine as a, like, 90s action sequence, but it doesn't hold up to the rest of the movie. The rest of the movie is so interesting and, like, done well and acted well and well thought out. I'm just gonna say that. Those two things. There's my two bottom shelves. What about top shelves? Best thing in the movie. Do we all have the same one?
We'll have to find out.
I mean, to differentiate, I'll just say, like, from the embassy scene to the scene with Kittredge at the restaurant, I think is such an amazing sequence, and so that's going to be my top shelf because I think it's really peak, like, spy thriller action, and I love it.
There's a line in that scene that I was going to use as my top shelf if everybody said the vault, I just love this line. Kittredge says, if you want to shake hands with the devil, that's fine. I just want to make sure you're in hell when you do.
Yeah.
So good. Oh, it's so good. It's, like, classic, like,
he's such
spy
a
banter.
Smarmy character, but you gotta love his delivery and his voice. It's like over the top, but I love it.
Yeah. And that scene where Ethan's feeling untrusting and all the Dutch angles and all the threatening nature, and you just, like, you like Tom Cruise because he's Mr. Top Gun. Like, you know, like, you like him, but, like, this guy hasn't done anything wrong. This guy's just doing his job, and he's doing it well. And then, like, yeah, it's a great scene, the between them. And I like that he ends up, Ethan Hunt kind of overcomes his, like, mistrust of that guy and learns who he can actually trust, their motives, and he goes with Kittredge at the end.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that character and actor to return after, like, a 26, 27 year hiatus from the series. He's going to be back.
Oh, really?
Dead Reckoning Part 1. Yeah. So, and yeah, the one part of my chaser that I didn't get to that I did want to bring up is how Kittredge, you know, used Ethan Hunt's family against him and, like, set them up as, like, you know, part of this drug operation. So, yeah, he's willing to go to any lengths to get his job done, and that makes him unlikable. But ultimately, he's, you know, he's operating within the confines of what he's allowed to do.
I like that. Well, what about your top shelf, Jay Scotty?
Yeah, I guess for my top shelf, I interpret this, like, how do I say the vault scene without saying the vault scene? So,
go for it.
Yeah. I'll say that, you know, this film, I think it stands out in the series as really being a spy thriller first. It kind of emphasizes that tension and intrigue over action, and I think it's a better film for it. The action set pieces are definitely, like, a nice flourish to this compelling story that's really more focused on betrayal and, like, identity. And I think it's, like, it's pretty telling and saying something that the most memorable sequence is one where our characters have to be quiet. Like, we have this thing gauging all the noise. And I agree with everything you mentioned about the pulley, but apart from it, like, going up at those weird speeds, like, when it's shaking and, like, it looks like Krieger's, like, losing his grip, and, like, what you brought up about the bead of sweat there, I kind of, like, I held back when you were gushing about that because I knew that was going to be my top shelf. But yeah, the way they create the tension is just palpable. And like, yeah, even on a rewatch, it's just all the tension is there, and it's incredible.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sticking with that. I'm just going to go with you. I'm not even going to try to hide it and say one part of it. I just think that's the best scene in the movie. Yep. And what I also like about it, I think it's the template for the rest of the films. I think Mission Impossible, part of the reason I don't think there's much character growth in these movies, in this one, I think there is. But in the future, I don't feel like there is, but I may be wrong. On a rewatch, we will see. But is that I think every scene in these Mission Impossible movies is meant to be like an action puzzle box that he has to get through to get to the next scene. And you often don't need context or character or any of that. You just need Ethan Hunt. You know, there's something important to do and he has to do it. And it's like the tension of getting to that next thing. And the scenes kind of operate self-contained. There's a lot of these scenes in all these movies that work like the vault where like,
sure,
you can go into the scene where he starts explaining the vault. Then the vault happens, and that's its own little short film about this badass action spy scene, you know, which I think works really well and is great. I don't know what that I'm hoping that on a rewatch I'll find more growth in characterization, but I think like that scene and how epic it is like a stamp, like it's a mold for how they make these movies going forward.
Sure,
definitely.
Yeah, agreed. And real quickly before we get out of here, I'd be kicking myself if I did not mention Danny Elfman's score.
Oh, like, me too. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's great.
I think he scores like all my favorite things.
Yeah.
You know, John Williams gets a lot of praise, which rightfully so. But like, yeah, Danny Elfman has an incredible body of work as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I feel like in Danny Elfman, so like, you know, it's Danny Elfman. Like it's so often he sounds so much like Danny Elfman when you hear stuff.
He does beautiful, creepy, the best. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And Multiverse of Madness is the perfect example.
Yeah.
Great call. Yeah. Great call.
Absolutely. He did the intro score, right? The
I think it's based on the TV show a little bit, but he updated it, of course.
Though, yeah, yeah, yeah. I just couldn't remember if that was all Danny Elfman. Sometimes they do, these days especially, they'll do like an intro, like the intro song they'll do sometimes like with some DJ will like also be working on that. And it's such a great updating and like rock version of that theme that I was wondering if someone else was involved. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I brought it up because I don't have a good answer, but I think you're right. I think it's just Danny Elfman. I remember that being on like MTV as like a music video. Like they just had like that score as like a music video. And it's like, wow, this was just, it's such a peak 90s action movie thing to do. I really like it. All right, well, that's all our shelves are bare, my friends. And we are all done here at Avengers Assemble, and we'll be back though over the next 7-8 weeks with 7 or 8 more of these movies. Really excited to do it. Tell them where they can find you online, Jay Scotty.
Yeah, please check out Animation Deliberation. We are the podcast that takes action animation and cartoons seriously but not too seriously. So Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is just around the corner. You're going to want to tune in and check out what we have to say about that. Thank you.
Yeah. Haley?
Yes, please check out Source Pages, where we read comics and novels as primers for all the geeky TV shows and movies you love, like Across the Spider-Verse. So you can listen to us and listen to Animation Deliberation or vice versa, but check us all out.
All right, and check out the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, where if Across the Spider-Verse does any kind of cameos from the MCU, we will definitely be talking about it. sorry, I just had to
fit. This is not the Spider-Verse podcast.
Yes, we're all very excited about the Spider-Verse. Let's just say that. All right, guys. Well, we'll be back very soon with lots. And hey, if you like this this trio of folks, add one more ingredient to the pot. And we've been doing a show called Multiverse News. Check out Multiverse News wherever you get your podcast and on YouTube. It's a lot of fun. We'll be back soon, guys. Peace.
Hasta lasagna. Don't get in the Anya.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to keep listening.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Bingers Assemble is a Stranded Panda podcast.
For all of our podcasts and other geeky creative projects, go to strandedpanda.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.